Awesome. Well, good morning, everybody. And I want to thank you all for joining us after the long weekend. I hope you guys spend your Labor Day with friends and family. It's nice and relaxing. I am joined by producer Jacob. Good morning, sir. I hope you had a good Labor Day. This is episode 10 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. And today will be the first day where we're going to be flying solo without Alex. In case you all didn't know, Alex is going to be stepping back for a little bit, taking some much needed time off. So we're going to have just Jacob, myself, and our awesome panel of speakers that we have up on stage. So I just want to say good morning to all of you. Good morning, AC, Jason, Jacob.
You're solo today, Coleman.
Yes, sir, Terrence, solo. But I'm not too worried about it because there was a lot of stuff that happened over the weekend. So there's so much to cover. It's crazy. I was out of town camping, so I didn't have a lot of cell service. I came back in, and there's a lot of topics to discuss. So before we jump into that, though, I just want to make sure that everybody understands what the mission of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces is. And the purpose of this show is to defend the values that our nation was founded upon. We champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals and communities to eliminate any central authority so we can advance our cause for a free and open society. And this includes freedom of speech, which we are definitely going to get into today. We accomplish our goal by utilizing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and together, as a community, we will continue our oaths to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and we are for freedom. Hoorah! Let's go.
Coleman, I know you're the man for the mission here, and you can do it solo, but I just want to let you know, I just saw Alex pop in. He's got eyes on you, eyes and ears on you. No pressure.
Oh, I see him. He just popped in the group there. And good morning to Shane. Good morning to Wade, Hunter, Texas Toast. How was your long weekend, guys? Alex, I still picture you sitting in your underwear on your front porch right now. Is that true?
Coleman, we really don't need to know how you picture Alex. That really wasn't helpful.
He doesn't have underwear on. He's sanding. He's tanning his balls.
No, I always picture him in the Homer Simpson whitey tidies. That's how I picture Alex every morning. So I just thought I'd let you guys know how I view Alex in the morning or how I see him.
Thank you for putting that image in our head.
It's definitely one you can't forget. Well, let's jump into some of the big topics that we want to hit today. I think we're going to be discussing them for a while. I think the big news that kind of broke over the weekend was X, Twitter, being banned in Brazil by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a disturbing way to start your morning, but yeah, more power to you.
Yeah, we definitely need to discuss it because it just seems like this has a lot of trickling effects. So just in case nobody knows what happened over the weekend, Brazilian Supreme Court Judge Alexander de Moraes banned X completely in Brazil. And I don't know if you've seen a picture of this Supreme Court judge, but he looks straight like a villain from a Marvel movie. It's kind of scary. But this same Supreme Court judge froze the assets for Starlink to prevent them from being able to access in Brazil. But Elon is trying to bypass this by beaming Twitter or X directly from space via his Starlink satellites. And he's not going to charge anybody in Brazil access to his internet. He wants it to be free so they're still able to get on the app. And I would definitely like to get some thoughts on this.
Well, there were a couple of other things that I thought were kind of shocking about it. Isn't there, I think the judge also decreed a $9,000 per day fine for people who use X via VPN, which is a whole, as far as I'm concerned, that's next level tyranny. right there.
I didn't see anything about the fines. So if anybody knows more, feel free to elaborate on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. It was like 9,000 or 10,000 or something. And somebody was saying that the annual salary for somebody in Brazil is like 10,000 a year. It's not just like a little fine. They're, you know, really trying to crush people over it. But I don't know how they can, I don't know how effective they can enforce that.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd have to have a special department to go and try and enforce that. There's just going to be too many for a couple people to handle. What I also thought was very surprising coming out of this was Kamala Harris with her speech talking about Twitter or X. Did anybody see it over the weekend?
Maybe Jacob has a clip to play for us of that, because I saw it, but I missed it. I didn't listen to it.
I'm not sure if he does, but I'll go over it really quick because I thought it was very startling. So she's quoted saying that Elon Musk, he has lost his privileges and there has to be responsibility placed on these social media sites to understand their power, end quote. So she's trying to go after anybody who doesn't want to follow underneath their cause. Because if you're not going to follow the government-approved narratives, they need to shut you down because it's too hard to control that narrative.
I hope we see a big bump in Nostr signups in the country of Brazil, because, you know, this is going to be an interesting canary in the coal mine situation where we see what kind of impact the tyranny has when they ban a whole country. It makes me think back to when there was the China ban on miners. It would be interesting to see how this plays out.
Hey, Terrence, and for what it's worth, I don't have a clip of that, but if somebody does and wants to pin it in the nest, I'm happy to play it, because it kind of happened. It seemed like late on Friday, and trying to fly under the radar on us, but with Labor Day weekend, I was a little out of the office and didn't catch too much of it, so I would love to see that clip as well to be more informed. But it seems like a lot of people are now gravitating towards Nostr and excited to see how these different platforms continue to grow as increased censorship happens on X. Another thing that I did see on X, kind of random, they had they got a TV app, I guess, now, so you can get on your X while you're on your television. So I don't know if anybody's actually going to use that service, but it seems like they're trying to really promote their live video. So it's kind of interesting to see how this platform is going to try to grow into like a television network or something like that.
I think something important to keep in mind too is that the harder the fist of tyranny squeezes, the more easily liberty can squeeze through the cracks. Obviously it poses like this initial challenge up front, but the more steps like this they take, the more they just force people to start using freedom tech. And it's really, they're shooting themselves in the foot by this.
Yeah, that's an awesome point. I'm going to jump in here real quick. It's that whole, that metaphor of the boiling frog and how they slowly turn up the temperature. And there's a whole bunch of frogs that are sitting in that pot. And what happens is when they crank up that temperature too fast, then more and more frogs notice and start jumping out. And so if they change the frequency at which they are increasing that temperature, more people are going to notice and say, wait a minute, this isn't right. And they're going to get the hell out and they're going to opt out of it. And in some ways, it's a gift, because it also creates an opportunity for us to have those conversations with people and say, hey, did you see what they're doing right now with this Twitter thing, where basically it's this state-approved social media, and if you're not using it, then you're breaking the law or you're in some type of violation. So again, when we view these things through that lens of, okay, they're giving us what we need to have these conversations with people, and people are going to be more prepared to be awake to this and be receptive to the reality of it and more likely to take off the blinders, then that really is creating a better opportunity. So when they crank up the temperature like that, we can expect more frogs to be ready to jump out of that pot.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we covered this a little bit last on Thursday's episode, where we compared to kind of like waves crashing over a ship. And I think every time they try and make these moves, these waves are crashing and the ship, being tyranny or tyranny, is taking on more water. So I think more and more people, as they keep pushing, are really starting to have their eyes just held wide open. So I hope that a lot of people find Noster and are able to move to it. But I think we as Bitcoiners and we as this community have a lot of work to try and help onboard people to it, because I don't think it's as easy as we're used to.
It's like when the state or politicians will sometimes, you know, at a local level, use quote unquote state of emergency as a way to, you know, bypass things that voters and citizens have voted for or whatever the laws are, you know, like a state. Oh, it's a state of emergency. You know, we don't need to get a vote. We don't need to get approval. And when it comes to like freedom of speech and information, you know, it's like it forces you to ask yourself or think about, you know, like, what level do we really have freedom in a government system? Because it's like, you know, you can't incite violence, and you can't, so I don't ramble on too long. It's like, at what point are they saying, oh, people are inciting violence, or this is contributing to terrorism, so this doesn't fall in the purview of freedom of speech? And so it's an overreach. Maybe I'm stating the obvious to everyone.
Yeah, Terrence, I don't think it's as obvious as we see it to everybody else. There's just so many people that are just still blinded and believe everything that the narrative coming from mainstream media. And I think that's where I become really frustrated when you can just see it. It's clear as day, and no one else wants to believe it. We posted a really funny video on the Bitcoin Veterans Twitter page about independence. Definitely jump on there and watch it, because it's exactly what's going on right now. Nobody wants to believe what their eyes are seeing. They just want to believe what they're being told. And so it's absolutely crazy. Thanks, Terrence. Alex, I see you're back up here. Do you have anything you want to share on this?
I think he's just here to taunt you, Coleman.
Just to keep me in line. I like that. I like that.
Helps boost the numbers. When people see Alex is in the room, they flock here. So appreciate your service, Alex.
Wow, anybody? Surprising. We're at 58K, Coleman. It's amazing.
We're at that 58K forever, I think. I don't think we're ever going to leave it. But I'm not sure if you all saw Dr. Jeff Ross closed his X account, and he's exclusively on Noster now. And during that transition, he switched from Dr. Bullcrab to Dr. Bull. So I think he's in the mindset that we're going to get out of this range pretty quick. Over the next couple of weeks or months, and we'll start our ride up this bull market. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Seems like Dr. Jeff is working for the Noster marketing company, and he's probably going to do a really good job because he has some great takes, and he's been pretty spot on. And we all know he was saying, I mean, I was calling it the thriller law, but you know, because he was saying on Michael Jackson's birthday, he was going to switch from a sideways bull crab to just a plain bull, which he did over on Noster. He said, I am now officially a bull. And I think Michael Jackson's birthday was August 29th. So in essence, boiling it down, it's because he thinks liquidity is going to increase rapidly starting now, especially during the month of September. So he says this is the time to load up.
Does anyone here have any insight as to why liquidity is just all of a sudden going to start? Is it really affected that much just by the rate cuts by the Fed?
That's my two cents, the rate cuts, and they might call it something different. But aside from that, some form of quantitative easing, you know, or some kind of money printing, whether it becomes into more debt forgiveness or some kind of new stimulus. I'm not sure what, but you got to believe with the election around the corner, you know, the Dems are especially going to want to make the economy look as good as possible, because the election is so close in addition. But I don't even think it was politically related for Dr. Jeff. I think it's just pure rate cuts. And right now the poly markets are pricing in a minimum of 3 rate cuts, potentially even 4, with each one being on average 25 basis points.
So that would work out to be 1 for every month until 25, correct?
Yeah, exactly. which would be pretty significant. I mean, a whole percentage drop, which is pretty huge. And that'll eventually trickle to the mortgage and real estate market, which really is, you know, the economy. You know, there's just a delay. So I would expect 2025, which a lot of people do, of course, to just really be flowing with a lot of liquidity, which will definitely move Bitcoin and, you know, other assets.
Okay. Well, moving on, I'm not sure if anybody saw the news come out that FTX is going to start their distributions for all their customers. $16 billion worth will start to be distributed back to everyone at the beginning of Q4. But the caveat I found with this was that this distribution will be made in cash. So I found that was very interesting, because if there's definitely long-term Bitcoin holders that for some reason had their Bitcoin on FTX, I would imagine a good amount of them will just put that directly back into Bitcoin. Anybody have thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, they never even had Bitcoin on there, right? We found out that FTX never even held as much as one Bitcoin. They immediately sold the Bitcoin to buy, you know, Solana and their other shitcoins. But yeah, you're right, Coleman. They priced the bankruptcy when they stopped it. I think it's back in July of 2022 when, you know, Bitcoin was down at 16, 17,000. So that's the value people are going to get back in USD. So, I mean, at least they're getting back something, but yeah, that sounds like theft to me.
Oh, 100%. Yes, agree with you, Terrence. And then I think it just sets up a very interesting dynamic. If FTX starts stripping that cash back to its holders and those people start buying Bitcoin, there's an article that came out over, I think it was on Friday, that the exchange reserves or the Bitcoin on the exchanges have dropped to a yearly low, with the price even kind of around 58, 60. So a little bit down from its all-time high. And I think that factor with a low supply of Bitcoin, with FTX beginning to allow their customers to, or giving up cash so they can go ahead and start joining the market, it could set up for a pretty big catalyst for the Bitcoin price to take off.
The irony is that the majority of FTX holders didn't have Bitcoin, right? They had, you know, Ripple and Cardano and all these other things. And oddly, by FTX freezing at the July 2022 price, they're now making more in USD value than had they pulled out then. Do you know what I'm saying? Because the prices of all those shitcoins has dropped so dramatically, they're worth almost nothing.
Yeah, I think the distributions are more than one in terms of dollar value is higher than 100% of their holdings at that time. And so, yeah, it sucks that they're not getting distributions in Bitcoin, but you can't do distributions in Bitcoin if you don't have Bitcoin in the first place. So yeah, it's kind of a remarkable situation. It sucks for everybody who thought they were in good shape with their Bitcoin on that exchange.
By the way, you know, I don't know if this is just me and my circle, but you know, I had friends and people near me and all, you know, that were into Celsius and that were into Voyager and like those seemed really popular. I don't know a single soul that ever had FTX or even talked about FTX. Like it wasn't until, yeah, I mean, we all heard about Sam Bankman-Fried and we saw the ads, we saw the logos on the umpires at the World Series, we saw the, you know, Super Bowl ads, but I don't know anyone that actually personally used FTX. So, you know, I don't know.
Hello, I'm Texas Toast and I used FTX.
Is that why you added Toast to Texas?
No, that goes back a long time, but no, I used FTX, Voyager, Celsius, BlockFi, I used them all. Got out in the nick of time when I found Bitcoin Twitter, so didn't end up taking any losses. But yeah, I'm your guy that used FTX, and it sucks. It was just right there in the mix of everything. And my thought at the time, I'm sure a lot of other people thought the same way. It's like, oh, you know, these are kind of sketchy, but if I kind of spread everything out over all of them, maybe it'll be okay. And that was not the case. And now cold storage, Bitcoin only. So it all worked out, but I'm glad. A couple of my buddies, another one of my buddies, he lost, you know, some money, some significant money, so he should be getting some back. But yeah, they're out there. We are out there.
Everybody's got to climb Mount Stupid every once in a while.
That's right. I try to do it like once a month.
Hey, man, I took Pomp's crypto course, so that's my big fucking stupid mistake that I did.
I knew about Bitcoin in 2011, and I didn't buy any.
Yeah, I used some to purchase World of Warcraft gold from Chinese miners. It's a good time.
This is a safe space if anybody wants to come up and confess any mistakes you've made on your Bitcoin journey.
And I think if you didn't make any mistakes, you weren't Bitcoining hard enough. Well, good morning, Alex. We can finally hear you. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was good, man. Completely unplugged. Completely. Like, I didn't even look at my phone for almost 4 days.
It's nice when you're able to do that. Just kind of get out, hang with family, hang out with friends, and just kind of disconnect. I always find it, though, as we're getting closer to the election, I say this every time we're on the spaces, but I just feel like when you reconnect or you get back on your phone, it just seems like it's the amount of stuff that happens is just, it's crazy.
Here's the amazing part. It'll still be there when you get back. It'll be waiting for you.
Oh, 100%. I find it fascinating just the amount of stupid clown world stuff that happens every week. It just seems to be escalating, snowballing, getting bigger.
But then how much of that changes anything in your life? Like, you can't, I feel like people think like, oh, I've missed out on all this. I'm so far behind. And it's like, really, when you take a step back, nothing is, it didn't affect you at all. It's something that happened.
Yeah, so, that's the crazy part about social media is that it will promote all the things that will agitate the shit out of you to get a reaction, because engagement is how that thing works.
So, Alex, did you review all of the Bitcoin Veterans chat channels and make sure you got up to date?
Yeah, I typically will open the channel. I'll see that there's like, I don't know, 300 messages, and then I just hit that bottom that goes to that button that goes to the end of the message chat, and I'm caught up instantly.
This is the way.
This is, by the way, here's a tip for any of you who are trying to get my attention in any of those chats at me, because I might have missed it.
Honestly, the best way to kind of get up to date is Randy K produces that DIB report, and it covers all the major things that are going on. So for me, coming back out of the long weekend after a camping trip, that was the easiest way to catch up with everything.
Yeah, he's the man. He's been super diligent, super consistent every day, pumping that thing out, man. It's awesome.
Yeah. One of the things I want to cover again, because it kind of ties into our earlier discussion, was during that Intel debrief that Randy put out, he mentioned Telegram again and Russia's concern with the arrest of Pavel Durov. And one of the reasons that Russia is so concerned with it is because their military uses Telegram as their communication. So they don't like cell phones or anything. They like Telegram because it's so secure. And I believe on Wednesday, we were mentioning how the U.S. may have authorized France to arrest Pavel. So it's very interesting how all these kind of things are intertwined.
Yeah, that actually is pretty wild to find out that they're using it. And apparently, well, according to the rumor anyway, they're actually using it to coordinate combat things, including... believe it or not, like where they're going to hit and things like that. That sounds insane to me on Telegram.
Yeah. So our artillery strike areas, coordination of troop movements and any intelligence that they've been able to gather. And so it's fascinating that now all of a sudden all that information is going to be the hands of the enemy, quote unquote.
That to a little bit part of me doesn't believe that, because you know, the way we do it, they're no different in terms of encrypted comms with encrypted radio and all that other kind of stuff. So it would shock me if that were actually true and they let some, you know, non-military organization, some civilian company that they didn't have full control over as their means of communicating, especially things like artillery data and things like that. That sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, I almost wonder if the information that they were putting on there was all just like BS, because they would have already had their own encrypted communications systems. So what would be the reasoning for doing this? Is it just like a Reddit? Because, I mean, Russia's really good, and a lot of these nations are really good at playing these unconventional games and fighting warfare in non-conventional ways. So I just wouldn't be surprised if it was just kind of like some throwaway stuff.
The speculation that I saw was that it wasn't like a top-down thing, let's use Telegram. It was more of the bottom-up, where the, you know, the people getting conscripted and shoved on the front lines were using it to talk to each other and, you know, and up the chain as well because of reliability issues. I'm about as far away from professional at what happens in those situations. So feel free to shut me down. But that was the impression I had. And if you even have that data, though, there's intel that you can glean, metadata from messages, and so on. So I don't think the speculation that it was, you know, Putin saying, let's use Telegram, everybody. It was the opposite.
See, that to me makes the most sense, because if you guys have ever used any military comms, you know how reliable they are. And I can definitely see that working.
Well, I mean, just if the part that this gentleman was saying is true about it's a bunch of young dudes, and instead of spelling out phonetically coordinates, you just copy-paste and text it. Maybe.
Yeah, and I can also see it being maybe just a means of like normal communication that actually be used, Telegram or Signal or whatever, just to communicate amongst ourselves. On day-to-day stuff, not anything like tactical.
Yeah, that's fair too. I know our guys do it a lot. Yeah, what is it called? Casually, you know, not as a actual procedure that they're using right now, but for sure, casually, a lot of dudes communicate that way now.
Well, and if you get access to that data, like I know when I was on deployment, we were using, you know, we would use the secure stuff for the secure things, but you know, you can gather a lot of information from, if you know they're, you know, a troop and they're in an AO and they're doing something, that's a lot of intelligence you could gather just by their basic conversation. So it's pretty valuable, because everybody's going to let little stuff slip.
Wait, is that, do you have your hand up?
No, I thought it came down. Sorry about that.
All good, sir. Real quick, shout out to Satoshi's Journal, Odd Job, Blizzard. Good morning, fellas. Does anyone have any thoughts, or I guess the real story of what's going on in Aurora, Colorado, with this Venezuela gang taking over?
Sounds like they like apartment buildings.
They like rent.
Yeah, I heard they show up as like, hey, we need to check on your gas, or we were told to shut down your, turn off your gas for some reason, and they've got like an orange vest on, and they look official, and they let them in, and then they scurry around and take over the place. So I just don't let people in with orange vests. It's very easy.
Fair enough. Looked like there were some rumors that supposedly the Hell's Angels were going to be coming and supporting them. This, in fact, did turn out to be false. But I think it's crazy what's going on over there.
Is there a good source of information for what's happening? I feel like there's still fog of war stuff happening around it. It was one in Aurora, and it feels like I saw something just slide past me that there was a similar situation somewhere in Southern California, but then I never saw more about it. So I haven't been able to go down that rabbit hole yet.
I thought they said Chicago, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the California. Chicago would make sense because they had a lot of immigrants come over, and they were housing them in the airport. So that would make sense if they're having issues. But I haven't heard either story. AC?
I thought the SoCal one was the 2 days in a row when they had supposed immigrants trying to board school buses in the morning.
Nah, I didn't hear anything about that. The only thing that I heard coming out of California was that they just approved giving loans to illegal immigrants up to $150,000 for their home, which does not have to be repaid unless they sell their house. Just absolute clown world stuff.
Well, Coleman, if you just renounce your citizenship, go down to Mexico, and then come back into the border, you'll get $150,000 off on your house.
Yeah, I'm sure it's crossing some people's minds. I don't get it. Want to welcome to the stage, Philip. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for asking.
Not a problem. I just wanted to touch on and provide some information about the Space Force base is in Aurora, Colorado.
Say that again. Elaborate a little bit.
The Venezuelan gang is at an apartment in Aurora, Colorado. There's also a Space Force base in Aurora, Colorado.
So what are you suggesting? That's somehow connected? There's a Space Force base in Aurora, and the Venezuelan gang activity is in there because of the Space Force base?
I just don't like that it's close. Not implying anything. I just put the two together that it's in the same city. I don't like that as an American. That's all for me. I'd love to hear more. I'm listening.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I didn't know Space Force had a base out there. But I was in Colorado. Go ahead, Alex.
I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
I was in Colorado earlier this year, and I was in Denver, and that was one of the issues that they just started talking about in February or March of this year about all the migrants that they had to house. And I knew back then that it was an issue because they were trying to find ways to cut out city budget, removing city employees so that they could use those funds to house the migrants.
I would just say in general, I wouldn't worry so much about crime stuff happening in the neighborhood of military bases. That's always happened. Sometimes it's the military guys themselves doing the crimes. This stuff is normal, and you're run-of-the-mill extorting you for rent guys, I don't think are necessarily a threat to U.S. military bases. It's just there are bases all over the United States of America, and there's going to be crime near them, and that's normal.
It'd actually be weird if there wasn't crime near them.
Yeah, you ever been to 32nd Street in San Diego? It's beautiful.
Kind of reminds me of the guard units will go out once a year for their annual training, and they'll usually go out in gigantic convoys and whatnot. Every time it happens, people, civilians, when they see it, they freak out. They're like, oh my gosh, are we going to war? There's all these military vehicles moving down the road.
Yeah, you always see those articles pop up, especially during the summer when everyone's doing their training, especially if you're in the reserves.
Clockwork. Do you guys see that thing with Kamala the whole... She made a statement, I guess, on Twitter about how honored she was to be at the summit, to Arlington National, so on and so forth, that completely blew up because, they're making a big deal out of Trump going there. He went there as an invitee of the families that lost dudes, and a whole bunch of them invited him there. They did, in fact, from what I understand, invite both Biden and Harris to come out, and they were ignored, essentially. So that is absolutely blown up. All of the families apparently made videos about it, posting about it. It's not a great look for the Harris campaign.
Yeah, just to add a little color, I saw a thing about that, and it looked to me like she tried to dunk on Trump, and then got smacked down really hard because she hasn't participated in any veterans-related campaign stops, despite being invited. And apparently Trump hasn't gone to an official, you know, veteran-oriented campaign event himself, but he did this thing, and yeah, so that was the extra part, that they're like, yeah, why don't you come talk to us and make us feel like our votes count before you start dunking on Trump for doing that.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that was for the services for the Abbey Gate, correct?
I don't know if that's what it was. I just saw the picture of it.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, yeah.
Okay, right on. Did you all see the, again, this is just a rumor. It hasn't been covered by any mainstream media news, which I don't think it will be picked up. But Kansas is going to be the first of five states to file civil lawsuits against Pfizer about their engaging in false and misleading market practices about the vaccines.
It's amazing that it took this long.
I think they were very well, the pharmaceutical companies were very well insulated. I think the reason it's taking so long is that they had to find a legal loophole to try and get it in and start pressing charges and taking them to court.
I'm pretty sure fraud is the way through, right?
I would assume so. In this article, it didn't mention what type of charges they were trying to put on them, other than they were just engaging in false and misleading marketing practices. So if that falls under the purview of fraud, then that's maybe the avenue they're going. But I think we'll start to see more of this as it goes on and more things are uncovered and more people wake up. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, if they're making material misstatements that are untrue and people get hurt based upon the statements they made, I mean, obviously, that's, to me, there should be no immunity from stuff like that. It's just common sense.
But even 2 years ago, you weren't allowed to mention anything about that. So it's nice to see that we're getting to a path where we can start talking about how corrupt these companies are.
Can you imagine what life would be like if Elon had not bought Twitter? Like, where would anybody talk about it?
Telegram.
Or that just pushed the adoption of Noster that much quicker.
Yeah, but see, in that case, you don't have mass audiences who are going to see that information. That's the problem. Is that if the systems of mass audience touch points are inundated and flooded with information to the contrary, and then you have 1% of the population seeking out platforms like Noster and Telegram, that's not going to do it.
Well, it's interesting that Trump, the report came out that Trump is considering Elon for a role in his administration, and he wants him to audit U.S. agencies and identify programs that we can cut costs to. I guess Trump liked the way that Elon
that
went
came from
X.
That. Yeah, exactly. That came from that Spaces that they did. Elon hosted a space with Trump. Or I guess Trump hosted the space, which is hilarious. He wanted to be the host. And then Elon joined him and talked to him for a while about it. And yeah, I think they were discussing it there, where he'd go in and basically do the same thing he did at Twitter. I think he didn't he fire like 80% of the employees at Twitter.
Does anyone have the exact number? It was a large percentage.
Yeah, it was a couple of big layoffs. I think it was like half the company really pretty quickly as he got in there, and then he kept sort of not rolling layoffs. It was more like, all right, what do you guys do? All right, you're all fired. It was a version of that. And then collectively over the course of the first year, I think it ended up being 80% of, it was like 80% of 8,000 employees or something like that. And they had a couple of service outages that were a little bit embarrassing for the, you know, not embarrassing, but the Elon haters piled onto, but mostly it stayed up, and then immediately they started rolling out new features that had been in the pipeline for a long time. So not only did they get more efficient, but they got more productive as well. It's a pretty great business case there.
space where those two guys go in and they're the consultants and they're like, so what is exactly that you do here?
I hope he cleans house. Just get rid of the agencies altogether. Shout out to Dombe and Punchplate out in the audience. Good morning, guys. Rolling forward, there was news that came out over Sunday night about Metaplanet teaming up with SBI Trading to create a strategic partnership to enhance their Bitcoin trading storage and management. So I guess what they're doing here is they're trying to use SBI Trading to use the Michael Saylor playbook. So they're able to use their Bitcoin as collateral and start taking out more loans. Does anybody have any?
I don't think Michael Saylor's encumbering his Bitcoin. He's doing other things, to my understanding. I'm not an expert on it, but he can get financing against basically the whole balance sheet of the company. I don't think he's actually giving up custody of that Bitcoin. I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah, I think Alex is spot on. The two things that I understand that MicroStrategy are doing is, number one, they're doing what people call accretive dilution, where they are increasing the number of shares available to be paid out to the investors at some point in the future. And then they're also taking on corporate debt at next to 0 or 1% interest to be able to buy Bitcoin and add it to their corporate treasury.
I was just going to say, yeah, and it you would think, oh, wow, who's going to take a 0% or 1% bond on the investor side? But because those are convertible bonds, in essence, I forget what it is, but they're making anywhere from like 13 to 20% because they're able to convert those into stock, which is now going up because they're buying Bitcoin with the bonds. It's just this positive feedback loop that doesn't seem to be ending, which is fantastic.
You know who does a really good analysis of this, who understands it pretty well, it seems to me, is Dylan LeClaire. And it has something to do with the volatility of the Bitcoin price creates a lot of trading, which apparently creates a situation where he can borrow money at less than 1%. And when he can't borrow money at less than 1%, he's selling stock to raise money to buy more Bitcoin. So it's one of those two things over and over again, depending on what's going on in the market.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with that is, guess who is on Metaplanet's team? Dylan LeClaire.
Yes, and that's why I think they're trying to use their Bitcoin as collateral for their financing, because they want to try the Saylor playbook. But they just don't have the capital or the size of a company to acquire as much as they're trying to.
Well, neither Saylor didn't start where Saylor is now, obviously. Sam Callahan posted a slide that showed the number of Bitcoin in August 2020 when Saylor started compared to July 2024. So that 4-year span, it's number of Bitcoin, market cap of the company. And when he started, the market cap, according to this slide, is 1.2 billion and today 38 billion, which is an annual rate of return of 140%. So Metaplanet, you know, starting very modestly, but if they follow the playbook, then, you know, 4 years out from when they start, we should see a pretty dramatic change.
Yes, because Metaplanet only holds 360 Bitcoin on their account.
That's less than Texas Toast.
So when I went camping this weekend with a bunch of homeschool families, and it was really fun and relaxing. And I'm in my community, I'm kind of known as Bitcoin guys. I always bring it up at any chance, and I have to try and limit myself because I know I can talk about it for hours. But one of the things I noticed over this weekend was that the people I was talking to were a lot more receptive this time about hearing about it. And they asked a lot more questions than normally. A lot of times people just sit there with that blank stare on their face and I just try and wrap it up really quick. But there was a lot of feedback and a lot of questions. And so I'm just wondering if anyone else is seeing that when they're talking with their normie friends.
Yeah, I saw that over the weekend too. my neighbor, who I just like have beers with after we put our kids down, he was asking a lot of questions. I ended up giving him Parker Lewis's book. He's a pretty smart guy, my neighbor is, so I think he'll be able to understand it. But Bitcoin Standard in that book, I think that's about all you need. But it's a lot of the broad economic questions and like just talking about inflation and in terms of that. That's what seems to be intriguing most people.
Yes, that was the biggest things people mentioned to me over the weekend was inflation, cost of goods just going up, and the fact that a lot of these homeschool parents, their kids will be moving out of the house in a couple of years or buying vehicles, and they have no idea how their sons and daughters are going to be able to afford a home. And so it was nice to show them, you know, the Bitcoin path and how that will help them out, get them off this hamster wheel they're spinning on.
What's up, Miggy Koss?
Hey, what's up, guys? Kids start school this week, so it's going to be a little more difficult for me to stop in, but I'm definitely going to still when I can.
Hey, Coleman, have you looked into that Ron Paul homeschool curriculum by any chance, or anybody on stage?
Welcome, Bitcoin Carney. No, I haven't. Can you tell me what it is?
I don't have any kids, so I was just a huge Ron Pauler back in the day. I haven't really checked it out, but I think Tom Woods helped write a bunch of it, and he's like a super genius libertarian professor, Harvard, and all their credentials. But I don't know how much you know about Ron Paul, but he was a big like anti-Federal Reserve, kind of like a gold bug. I know he's a straight line to Bitcoin for a lot of people. So it'd be interesting to see like if you or if those parents started in on the Ron Paul curriculum, like how quickly they would get to Bitcoin from there.
Yeah. Ron Paul was the reason I got into Bitcoin. I read his book first and then just started asking the questions. So I agree with you. He's definitely a good bridge to get people going to his homeschool curriculum or who he's partnered with. I'm not sure with that. There are thousands of different homeschool curriculums to look through, and they each offer pros and cons. And so I would just choose whatever one works best for your family and your situation. Some allow you to have more freedom with traveling, where others are, you can do like, it's more like an online one-on-one with a teacher. So it just kind of depends what works best for you.
Are there like, and I mean, I assume the reason a lot of people homeschool is because they don't want the government indoctrination camp material going into their kids' heads. So is most of the homeschooling curriculum like pretty based, or I guess there's a spectrum? I don't know.
There's definitely a spectrum, but it depends on which avenue you want. We use a faith-based curriculum, and then we just kind of pick and choose what we want to take from others. So we definitely don't use just one curriculum and follow it. We'll pull from a couple and we'll teach that way. The reason why we don't want our kids to go to school is just that we don't want them to be fed, you know, think inside a box and remove all of that creative freedom. And that's one of the biggest things I notice as a business owner is we hire a lot of high school and university aged kids to work. I shouldn't say kids, young men, young women to work. And the biggest thing I notice is that I have to hold their hand for everything. They don't like to take the initiative. They don't like to think creatively. So I actively look for homeschoolers if I'm going to be hiring somebody, just because they work better for our business.
Yeah. I saw a crazy screenshot from one of the MSNBC or one of those, and it was like how many new job applicants brought their parent to the interview. And it was absurd. It was like in the 40s plus.
I can definitely attest to that. I've seen some crazy things with especially high school aged applicants, what they do. Yeah, definitely. I think that's a skill that should be taught everywhere, especially in public school, is how to interview. Definitely don't bring your parents with you to the interview. I've had parents sit in on the interview because they wanted to make sure their kid was doing well. It's crazy.
I think it tells you more about the parenting than the kid. like the parent thought it was a good idea to go there and show up. So it kind of like tells you how they raised the kid the whole time.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it for sure.
That's definitely right. I think that's definitely right. Like, it's one thing to be, you know, it's understandable to be concerned about your kid and how they're doing. But the truth is that, like, you can't coddle children, because if you do, you remove all sense of consequence for their actions and their performance from their life, and they're disconnected from reality, and you're doing them a disservice. Actually, you're a bad parent. That's a bad parent. Because you're going to create a kid that is unable to cope with the world. The world does not give a crap, and it is brutal, and it will mess you the hell up if you can't get after it and break through stuff on your own. And that's a huge issue. I see it all the time.
Yes, as parents, you definitely want to make sure that your kid fails under your supervision, because they're going to fail, and they have to fail. That's how they learn, just like Alex said. And that's why we parent, is to make sure that they fail underneath us so we can pick them back up and guide them in the right direction. If they're failing for the first time in university or outside of that, those failures are going to be a little rougher.
Don't coddle them kids.
Yeah, no helicopter parenting. We're getting to the top of the hour here, so I just want to make sure I reach out to, or I want to thank our partners. First off, I want to thank Black Sheep Ammo. They graciously donated us 6,000 rounds for our Bitcoin Veterans Range Day in Nashville. Great guys. Talked to the owner. He's a Bitcoiner as well. So definitely check them out, blacksheepammo.com. Next up is going to be Solo Satoshi. Decentralize the mining hash pool. So have your own miner at your house, just a plug and play. Really good. I just ordered one. It just came in over the weekend, so I'm looking forward to set that up. There's actually a Solo Bitcoin miner, one block, 839, 700, 789, I think, over the weekend. So the Solo miner mined or found the block and got that block reward. So it's possible. You don't have to be part of a big pool. So check them out, solosatoshi.com. Next up is Punchplate. If you need to have your seed phrase written down, don't write it down on paper. Make sure you put it on a plate. Punch it this way. It goes stand water, stand fire. It's gonna last through what nature throws at it. And then check out Silent. They're Faraday bags, so make sure you put your hardware device inside there. EMP, solar flare. Make sure that is protected. Go to slnt.com/btcvets, and you'll save 15% off plus free shipping on qualified orders.
Those bags, by the way, they cut off live comms too. If you put your phone in the bag and just close it up, it disconnects it from, you know, all networks. Basically, there's no radio frequency that can go through it. So if you just want to disconnect from the world, like you have a private meeting or you're doing something private, you know what I'm saying? Or you just want to disconnect, you can throw it in there.
They need to have Faraday houses.
We're trying to get them to make, you can get some Faraday bags that'll cover generators and gensets, for example. We're trying to get them to make Faraday bags that will go over a vehicle.
What kind of private meetings are you talking about? I'm so curious.
The private kind. Yeah, I was always wondering if they could build something for your gun safe. There's a lot of digital optics out there. And if something happens, or even not to mention just the code to get into a gun safe, a lot of them are digital. So if something were to happen, you're not getting into your safe.
By something, Coleman is referring to an EMP. If you don't know what that is, go check out that book, One Second After. Everybody should read that book, in my opinion. It's very good. Eye-opener.
100%. It just shows you how crazy things will get and how all plans go out the door really quick in that situation. Well, that's the top of the hour. Does anybody have any closing comments or remarks they want to share with the group?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to the head of the 58K gang, because that dude's an asshole.
Stay strong out there, 58K gang. We will get through this storm. All right, it's always darkest before the dawn.
That just means you can stack cheap sats. Let's make sure we lengthen that time preference for all of us.
Dr. Jeff better be right.
I think he's right. I think we're all just getting antsy. This has been chopping at 58K for the last 2 months. So September will be a good month.
To be fair, it's been trading in this range since the end of February. So it's been almost 7 months now.
Do you guys think the ETFs are able to rehypothecate or suppress the price?
I don't think they're able to suppress the price. I think that they can go in and I'm probably wrong with this, so please someone correct me, but I believe they're able to go into the futures market and try and make the price lower so they have a better entry price. How that works exactly, that's above my pay grade.
It kind of feels like the old gold thing they used to do, but I guess at some point somebody could call them on it and say, show us UTXOs.
Yeah, I don't think that long term it's possible. Like maybe in the short term, but like if they're making a lot of money, why would they blow up that cash cow? Like this has like been the forever conspiracy theory in the gold markets amongst the gold bugs, right? Is that there's long term suppression of the gold price. And I don't know. There's a lot of evidence on the side that it may be possible, but there's also a lot of evidence on the side that it's not long term anyway. Short-term and manipulation, that's not new. They don't do that in just gold. They do it in silver. They do it in equities. They do it in all kinds of markets. I don't know if you guys ever saw that Jim Cramer video where he goes off talking about how they used to do it. He used to work with a firm in Wall Street where they would literally take a position and then they'd start a rumor and they'd get a whole group of guys calling everybody they knew on Wall Street to get this rumor flowing and then they'd trade against it. And they'd use a bunch of money. Sometimes they lead into it, like, you know, with $40 million to create a certain impression, and then they trade against it. So this kind of stuff is not new. It's not speculation that they're doing that either, because there's already been billions of dollars of fines. The difference is in Bitcoin, in the gold markets, it's very opaque. You can do a lot of what they call over-the-counter trading, where you don't have final settlement, which is very different than final settlement in Bitcoin. What I mean by that is you could do a trade. Final settlement in gold means you physically get custody of the gold, right? Because gold is so heavy, because it's so expensive to move, literally you need like armored trucks with dudes with guns and all the things, right? So what they'll typically do is instead of settling physically, they'll just leave it in the vault that it's in and they'll make a book entry on somebody's ledger, right? That's not the way it works with Bitcoin. You're literally clearing the Bitcoin with every OTC trade, and the custody changes every time, so you can prove the custody. So I just don't think that's likely. There's people who are like, yeah, they're going to do it with the ETFs, and it's like, I don't know about that, man. Like, if you're collecting billions of dollars of fees every year on this thing, why would you blow it up? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and just think of it as a big, giant balloon underneath water. You can hold it under there for a while, but eventually it's going to pop out. And when it does, it's not just cresting the surface, it's going completely out of the water. So that's how I would look at this short-term price action. I think that was a great note and a great way to end this show, guys. So this could be a wrap. I want to thank you, everybody who came on stage and contributed. It really means a lot to me, especially just trying to get a feel for the show. So I really appreciate everybody who came on stage. Make sure you catch the Bitcoin Veterans podcast every week. It's going to be live here on Twitter at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm not sure who we have on tonight's show. I couldn't get an answer in the back channels, but make sure we'll post it up on the we will retweet it to make sure we get everybody out and let them know who's going to be on. Join us every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Central Time. This is where we're going to talk. We have some of the brightest minds in the room. And we want everyone to get on that mission. It's pretty clear at this point. It's going to be freedom or tyranny. Tyranny. Sorry, guys. Got a little bit of a head cold. I'll see you guys tomorrow morning. You guys have a great day and go crush it.